Well, welcome. My name is Ed Kless, and in the interest of full disclosure, you should know that there's a recording device up here. You're being recorded, so that none of you can say, and sad dash. I'll play it back. All right, so, but I want you to come in. I'm going to record this session. Hopefully, we'll make a podcast out of this if the quality is pretty good. If you do ask a question, and we expect there to be lots of dialogue and interaction, please use your outdoor voice, even though we are inside. All right? All right, we good with that? So outdoor voice, for those of you with children, we're allowed to use the outdoor voice inside. Come on up, two more seats up front. Yeah, push them aside. There, we've got room. Come on up. All right, so I don't know if any of you read the description of this session, but there's no PowerPoint. In fact, it is PowerPoint. It's a PowerPoint slide, but I don't have a flip chart, so I'm going to use this as a whiteboard. All right, we're going to design this session together. This is an interactive session. If you came here just to kind of hang out and relax, you came to the wrong session. All right, so we want interplay here. We want to be going back and forth. So we're going to design right now what we're going to talk about. The subject, as you're all aware, is value pricing, something that I've been talking about for a long time. Just before we get started, I'm going to get some feedback from you, but I want to understand where this room sits in terms of using this. I'm going to use a definition of value pricing that's a little bit really different from what I normally say, okay? So, but just in the interest of getting some feedback from you. For the purposes of right now, when I say value pricing, what I mean is that you do not bill by the hour. So hours do not appear on any of your invoices. That's what we're going to mean by value pricing for the purposes of this little quick exercise. How many of you in this room have more than half of your engagements where you do not show hours to the customer? Okay, so there's the answer to the first question to the rest of you. Yes, there are people doing this. All right, we had pretty good. How many people are doing a little bit of it? Less than 50%, but not zero. Less than 50%, but not zero. All right, so about another third. And how many haven't done value pricing at all? Okay, great. So we've got a good mix. Good mix here. That's a good thing. All right, so what I want to talk a little bit about, or just to get some feedback from you, is what are your thoughts and questions on this? This is the whole purpose of this is to have an interactive dialogue for us to talk. So for those of you that are doing it, what do you want to do more of? For those of you that are thinking about doing this, what are your questions? What are your concerns? So let's go. I'm going to start taking notes down here. So let's start with questions and concerns about this topic in general. Wayne.
The answer to the question, so how many hours do you have?
From a customer.
From a customer, when you start talking about that.
So customer concerns. They say, how many hours? Okay. Who else? Yeah.
That I'll waste a lot of time, that I price it wrong, and so I spend more time than...
Okay, poor pricing?
Yeah, poor pricing.
That I just price it wrong. Okay, yep, yeah.
How can you remain competitive if you're pricing based on value? You don't know what your competitors do.
Okay, competition. Not doing VP. Yes, did I capture that? Mm-hmm. Yeah, anybody else? Thoughts, concerns, yeah?
I want to know when and what type of engagements people that are doing it in here, when
okay.
Are they using it?
Okay, so where are you using it? Okay. Yeah.
I'm not going to know how it differs from VP pricing.
Okay. So VP versus fixed fee. Yeah.
What's something industry specific? We're nonprofits focused. Anything different on nonprofits as opposed to more profit fee? You know, what is some of the difference?
Okay. So industry concerns. We don't have to have them all out here now, but just if there's anything that's burning on anyone's mind. Yeah.
Internal issues like employee compensation.
Yep. How do we comp them if we're not billing by the hour? Oh, my God. Yeah.
Changing a customer's mindset from an hour.
Okay, that's kind of a part of here, part and parcel of this first question, right? Customer concerns. Yeah?
If you eliminate the billable hours, and I understand from the customer side, but how do you become better internally? How do you measure yourself and benchmark yourself?
Okay, let me just make sure I clarify the question. So what you're asking is if we eliminate timesheets, is that the question you're asking? So if we eliminate timesheets, how do we measure ourselves internally?
And how do you become better?
Okay. All right.
And how do you plan for capacity?
Capacity? Pretty good list. Anything glaringly missing? Yeah.
Scope issues is where you scope creep. You know, how do you then add on, you know, additional? If you say, well, you know, a couple hours. Now we're talking about value pricing. So.
Okay. Let me just quickly defer and say that I'm doing a session on scope later on. So this is outside the scope of this session. Score one. No, seriously. We can address that briefly. So, but I am going to do a session. I've done it like the last 4 or 5 years here at Insights on creating a scope document initially, and that's where a lot of these things start. So, okay, let's just jump in. All right. So isn't this fun? Where I'm going for you here is, I did not see the presentation yet until yesterday that our featured speaker gave, but this is exactly what he was talking about, right? You know, customized experience. No pre-written PowerPoints for you. I'm sure I could have done the same, you know, they would have the same questions, but I think it's a lot more fun this way. So let's jump in. Okay. Let's talk about, I'm just going to pick and we'll check them off as we go. Competition not doing VP. Competition not doing VP. How do we compete when somebody else is in there with ours? And here's the secret formula on this. You're like, yes. See, because one of the things that we've been talking about here at Sage for years is individual partners, you have to differentiate your organization, right? Well, I got news for you. Differentiation means doing things differently. Yeah. Okay? So this is a way that you can differentiate your organization. Hey, we don't bill by the hour. We don't bill by the hour. We're going to give you a fixed price up front that you're going to say yes or no to before we begin the work. With, and this is not on your list, but I'm going to add it, ready? A 100% money back guarantee. But Ed, they might ask for their money back. Yeah. You better be doing a good job. This is not for the faint at heart, okay? If you suck at what you do, continue to bill by the hour. Right? You'll be much better. You're going to cover your cost. The hourly pricing is laziness. It's just lazy. It's lazy pricing. And it's not what the customer wants. Go ahead.
When you talk about 100% guarantee, we've tried to do that, and we have actually offered it. However, when we go to Sage and say, look, this is like a $300,000 deal, and we can't take the risk of all the software coming back at us.
Okay.
You know what the response is?
What?
Tough.
Tough. Okay. Meaning Sage says to you.
Yeah, well, absolutely.
Look,
I'm just being very honest with you because, you know, I took your word to heart, and in fact, we went out with a CRM partner. We closed a really nice deal, and we basically got from both divisions, no.
No, we wouldn't. Let's just explore a second. So, is this coming back?
Yeah.
The customer is executing the 100% money back guarantee against you.
Well, we have to reconfigure the deal.
Beforehand. Okay, well, let me just say this. If I were you and I was a partner, if I were you, I would offer a 100% money back guarantee on everything. All right? I would. That's what I did. That's what I would do. If you're uncomfortable with that, offer 100% money back guarantee on your services only. And say, look, once you purchase the software, there is no guarantee from the publisher on that. In fact, we can't guarantee where we warranty the software, but we don't guarantee it. And there's a difference. And that's okay. if you feel more comfortable with that. I would offer 100% money back guarantee on anything, and it would be because I would want to be making sure that the customer is going to be satisfied. Right, that's what the most important thing is to me. Let me just so that answers your question. You can back off a little bit if you're only comfortable with it on the services. Well, that's the thing you have control over. I'm all right with that. So don't offer it on the software. Now, one of the things with a 100% money back guarantee, by the way, is that if they say we're going to execute this, they don't get to keep the software. Right? I mean, they can't say, yeah, we're pulling the plug on the 100% guarantee, but we're keeping everything. No. Right? And it's in the contract that it's not something that they can call you up 3 years later. Hey, we're sending it back. All right? That's not where this is going. There are going to be specific milestones. I would also encourage you that from a pricing standpoint, this is one thing that you would offer in the following condition, the full 100% money back guarantee, if it's completely prepaid. Okay? If you're not going to completely prepay it, then you can reduce the guarantee, and maybe that's where you pull out the guarantee on the software. Right? Because that's now a point of negotiation. Anybody want to get paid up front in full for everything? Just quite, yeah, does that work? All right. So this is now a negotiation point that you can use. If you use the 100% guarantee and they want to continue that, yeah, we like this 100% guarantee. Well, it also means you prepay it. Well, we can afford to prepay it. Great. That's why we have leasing. All right. Next question. If you want it all up front, if they want that, they have to be prepared to pay. None of us can, you know, not take something, use it, and then say, well, yeah, we want to send it back and give us our money back after years. Not possible. All right, so we're going to protect us. Let's quickly hit this question. So, okay, on the competition, right? What if we do if the competition is using it? Yeah, you celebrate. That's what you do, right? When the competition is billing by the hour, you're like, yeah, because now I'm different from them. I can actually show and demonstrate that I'm better.
And yeah. So you're saying we have to be prepared to lose some of those initially because some customers just judge based on price.
Yeah. How many of you want customers to just buy on price? Yes? Why do you take them? Okay, so there's the answer, right? Yes, you're going to lose deals for people who are only buying on price. And the answer, and here's my response, so what? So what and who cares? I don't want those customers anyway. Do you? Who are just looking at price? Tough love. It's tough love. Okay. The question was value price versus fixed fee. What is the difference? And this is a pretty common question. This is kind of a base understanding thing. A value price is a form of a fixed fee. But not every fixed fee is a value price. Value price has, by the way, nothing to do with cheap. Value doesn't mean cheap. It just means that this is what value pricing actually means. That the price, when we deliver a price to a customer or a prospect, the price is derived from our understanding of the value that will be provided to the customer, not our costs. See, value pricing differs from what is traditionally known in the accounting world as cost-led pricing. Yes? We have systems that do this, right? Which is cost-led pricing is terrible. It is one of the worst forms of pricing that's ever been invented. In fact, the economic theory that cost-led pricing comes from was an economic theory that was fully discredited in 1991. Fully discredited. Anyone know what happened in 1991, historically speaking? Berlin Wall came down. Because the economic theory that is behind cost-led pricing is Marxism. It was Karl Marx who, in Communist Manifesto in 1845, came up with the labor theory of value. That said, the value of anything is equal to the subcomponents of the parts or whatever it is taken together, plus the labor that it takes to put the sucker together. Now, Marx was not anti-value. He was not anti-value. What was Marx anti? Profit. So, let's think about this for a second. We have now taken an economic theory that said profit was evil and tried to build our businesses around it. think we have a problem. Right? Cost-led pricing was put forward by Karl Marx. It's communism. It's part of the Communist Manifesto. All right, so we, the difference between a fixed price and a value price is one that the price and value is actually set by the understanding of the value of the customer. Which, let me just quick say one thing here. Clearly, none of you in this room understand, because if you really did, you'd be in the on-call session. All right, no, I'm kidding. I'm glad you're here. I'm just joking on all of us in this room. But he is the master. If you haven't read the book, Let's Get Real or Let's Not Play, I encourage you to do so. He is the master at allowing you as a salesperson to go in and understand what is the value of the solution that you're providing. And if you don't fully understand the value of the solution that's being provided to the customer, value pricing becomes moot. You must value sell. You must sell on value in order to truly value price. You can fix price all you want. Because what you can do is figure out how many hours it's going to take and do some kind of a huge multiplication on this, right? Have it go, right? And we're going to, you know, multiply by 6 instead of 3. And that's a fixed price. But it's still not a value price. Value doesn't, price does not come from cost. Please understand, this is the thing that you have to forget about. Most of you probably are accountants or raised in accounting firms or in technology where it's all been about billable hours and all of this stuff. We have to get out of our head that price comes from cost. It does not. It does not. Right? Otherwise, you know, the great example that was used yesterday on stage was Starbucks coffee. Right? It would be, you know, 10, 15 cents if price were based on cost. That's what their cost is. And some multiplier, 30 cents. No, they charge, you know, 100 times because it's based on what the perception of the value is to the customer. And what I think is great about the talk yesterday, it was right in line. I was in the back going cheering everything that guy said because it was right in line with everything. We have a unique situation in this industry where we can get to every single one of our customers on a one-on-one individual basis and assess what the value is. Pricers in this world would kill for that. Most people who do pricing have to arrive at some perceived value based on surveys that they do across different marketplaces. We have the ability to customize an individual price every single time. You know, Steve Jobs has to come up with the iPod and say $500. You know? He's got to make a guess. There's probably people who would have paid more. They're leaving money on the table. Right? Those bounds. Okay, so that's a fixed price versus VP. Everybody understand the difference there between fixed price and value price? Okay. Poor pricing. Let's go back to poor pricing. That's clearly a concern. When you start doing this, you're like, aha. So if I can't base my price, Ed, is what you're telling me, based on my costs, what's the formula? What's the formula for me getting some kind of price then? Because I really need it in my spreadsheet. All right? I really need that. Second big learning or thing that you have to forget about. There is no rule. Forget it. There's no formula. There is not a formula for pricing. In fact, I guarantee you that if you're pricing based on some kind of a formula, it will be lower. Formula-led pricing will cause your prices to be lower. So there is no formula. There is no formula. One of the things that you should strive to do, though, is to try to give the customer options. And this is an important point. What I don't want to see, I mean, by the way, just quick aside, the worst thing that you can do is give them a proposal that looks like this. You know, range of hours. You know? This implementation is going to be somewhere between 75 and 125 hours. This is the worst. This is not options, because what does the customer think it's going to be? Hello. What do you think it's going to be?
125.
Plus 10%. Right? Let's be honest. And we're okay with that. That's not an option. What we want to come up with is develop three distinct levels of service that we can offer a customer at three different prices within the same proposal. And then the customer chooses. Let me give you an example of this options pricing that you're probably very familiar with. How many of you gone into a computer store and noticed that Hewlett-Packard printers always has three models that look exactly the same? You have the 710, the 730, and the 750, right? What's the big difference between these three printers? What does the 750 do? What does it do to the other thing? It's faster. It's more pages per minute. All right, so if you were the engineers at Hewlett-Packard designing the 700 series of printer, would you do the following? Let's design the 710 and figure out how to speed it up. Or let's design the 750 and figure out how to slow it down.
750, slow it down.
Yeah, would it surprise you then that the cost of the 710 is higher than the 750 because they had to write code to slow the 750 down? So their cost for the 710 is more. Why do they do this? Options. Options. Offer options in different levels of value. So the low level of your proposal is install train. That's all we do. The mid-level of our proposal is install train, and this is, there'll be more on this at the scope session. We're going to convert these data files. We're going to write these customized reports. High level, top level proposal, we're going to, all you got to do is show up on Tuesday, November 22nd, and your system's ready to go. Right? But with a much higher price tag. So that you're given options. Options pricing, very important concept to this. So the poor pricing, the way this relates to poor pricing is the fact that you are usually just giving one price and hoping to God that you've got it right. Now, that having been said, when you first start out doing this, it would not be uncommon for you to lose money on the first couple because you're a sucky pricer right now. All right, let me just be honest with you. You're not so good at it. All right, so it's not going to be surprising that, you know, in your heart of hearts, are you going to lose money on it? Well, no, you're probably just not going to make as much as you thought you should. Right? This is now input and feedback for you the next time to give a more aggressive price. And what are we going to base this price on? Well, what's the value to the customer? And I'll keep coming back to this because it's so important. We have to understand what is the value to the customer. And this is not done by going in and saying, so, what do you think this is worth? Right? That's not how this is done. This topic is also beyond the scope of this class. Again, see Rob Johnson's session, Mahan Khalsa, on uncovering value in the sales cycle, because that's where this happens. But it is a prerequisite. I would even say this, and I just read this this week because I'm a student of this, and on I'm going to mention a website, verasage.com, Verasage is a think tank that I'm a fellow at that is dedicated to getting rid of timesheets and the billable hour from service professions. That's our mission, to bury the billable hour. And Ron Baker, who's the founder, had a posting, and he had this in the posting, and I thought this was great. Scope of value precedes scope of services. Right? Scope of value precedes scope of services. I will not do a scope of services until we have an understanding of what the scope of, or let's just use understanding of, value. What's going to happen in this organization? What is, Rob calls it, what's the cost not to solve and the benefit to solve? We have to have an understanding of those things in dollars, not just guesses. Because if that's not there, you're not going to go anywhere. It doesn't matter what kind of pricing you use, actually. If they don't understand what the value is, it doesn't matter whether you bill by the hour or value price. All right, so they have to understand that. All right, so does that address the poor pricing issue? There's a chance that you will. But you know what? That's okay, too. Because one of the things that that billing by the hour does, where does billing by the hour, in fact, I already said it per se, who's more at risk when you bill by the hour, you or the customer?
That's the question.
Clearly the customer, right? You're transferring the risk to them. You're saying, oh, if this takes longer, oh, well. Sorry, so sad, too bad, I'm still getting paid. You're the one at risk of going over budget. I'm still going to make my money. So, I mean, just the attitude is one of you're putting the customer at risk. Value pricing or even fixed pricing puts you at more risk. But you know what? That's okay. More risk equals more profit. That's where profits come from. You wouldn't have profit in your organization if you weren't doing something that was risky. If this stuff were easy, nobody would pay you for it. Fair? So the whole concept of pricing is that, look, you are now spreading the risk over more and more customers. This is the earthquake insurance example. The insurance companies do not price earthquake insurance as the following. Let us know if you want the insurance. When there's an earthquake, we'll add up all what the costs were and then send a bill out to everybody. Right? That's not how insurance companies work. But that is, think about it. I mean, that's an absurd, you're saying, that would be absurd. That would be absurd. That is exactly what you are doing to your customers. Exactly. Yep, we don't know how much it's going to be. We'll add it up at the end and send you a bill. No wonder they don't buy. I'm amazed we sold anything. All right? All right, customer concerns. How many hours? Let's see. Yeah, let's address that one. Customer concerns. When they ask you, and this was Wayne's question, so how many hours is that? I think the standard answer is I don't bill by the hour. Huh? I don't bill by the hour.
And then they say, well, you must have some idea how many hours you can put into this.
Yeah, but that's none of your business. Do you tell your customers your costs? Do you tell your customers your cost?
No.
Say, do they go around saying, you know, justifying their price to all their customers? In fact, probably one of the best kept secrets, right? In their company is, you know, understanding what their cost structure is, and they don't let their customers know how they're pricing, yes?
Oh, okay.
So why should you have to justify your existence? I'm going to guarantee the price. There's a difference. Yes, Linda.
I think perhaps the customer's question is really not about how many hours it's going to take.
Yeah.
I think it's more about how long from start to finish.
Yeah. There's two answers there, and you're exactly right, Linda. There's one of duration. Customers really want to know two things. When are you going to get this to me? Right? I need this pretty soon, which is allows you to, by the way, elevate the price because the more that it's needed, yes, the higher you can price it. Right? And if it's needed like really quickly, if it's needed today, we can price it even more. Oh, that's not fair. That's gouging, Ed. That's gouging. No, it's not. All of you flew here, many of you flew here on an airline. That's how they price. You need it sooner? It's a higher price. And you know what? You weren't going, damn those airlines. I hate that. You're actually thankful. I mean, you think about this. If they didn't increase their price based on load capacity, they didn't increase their price, they would sell out every plane at, like, say, Webfare price. And if you, who is a frequent traveler, decided to go on a business trip a week before, a couple days before, they wouldn't have a seat for you. And then you'd be mad. I'm a frequent customer. You gave away all the seats on this plane to this person paying $80. Now I can't fly. Whereas I would be willing, if I were, you know, if you had a seat, I would pay $2,000 to get on that plane. See, I'm one of the few people who believe that in New Orleans, $6 for water after Hurricane Katrina was not gouging. It was absolutely a moral thing to do for them to raise their prices based on demand, because if they didn't, people would go in and buy 50 gallons for me. Right? Yeah.
Actually, since we took your training, we tried this out.
Yeah.
When the customer asks, why is it costing more, it's very simple. You have to put more resources to meet your time frame, your new time frame. And so the customer doesn't really understand what's going on in the organization. All he knows is that they're getting delivery on time. Mm-hmm. So it's going to cost them more.
That's all they care about. That was Linda's point. I'm going to get this the date you say. And the first question is this going to provide value to me? See, and that's where the question comes in. This is I'll address that little the scope creep issue. Every single scope document, once you have a scope in place, if there is a change request that's made against that scope, should be evaluated on the same circumstances. All right, you want this change. Let's get an understanding of why you want this change from a business needs perspective. Translation of business needs. What's it worth? You need this report. Why? Why do you need this report? Anybody want to play role play with me? We've got a customer situation, and
they always print this report.
Because you always need this report, so you always print this report.
Yep.
And if we gave you this report, what would happen?
I'll print it and I'll give it to my boss, the mail.
You take it to your boss.
I'll take it to my boss, like I always do.
Okay. Let's just define the scenario. Is this a new report that you need? This is a brand new report.
You want a new report?
Yeah, a new report.
Yep.
Right.
I want a new report because I have 5 spreadsheets that I maintain, and I have to collect information from all of these places.
Really?
Yes, I do. And I can't always find the people that I need to collect this information from.
Mm.
It's very time consuming.
Really? So this would significantly reduce...
Pretty
difficult. Yeah, it would reduce my time. You know what? I probably spend half a day.
Really?
A
week. So if I were to be able to deliver that report to you by Friday, it's, you know that $2,000 would, I mean, it's a no-brainer, right? I mean...
Yeah, absolutely.
What a thank you. Well, how many hours is that going to take you?
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't have anything to do with my time then.
Well, you can avoid work. So what's that worth to you? Avoiding work? Infinite value.
How about $2,000? That's an awful lot of money.
Where's the question? Okay, yeah. That's an awful lot of money. I'm glad you brought this up. Yeah, that is. But you know what? It's clearly worth more than $2,000, right? Because you said it's going to save you half a day a week, right? Clearly. And not only that, but you know, the reason why we do reports this way is because we got sick and tired of providing reports for people when they said, they call us up and they say, hey, we need this report. We would come out and we would spend 3 or 4 hours designing the report. And then we go, well, this is great, but you know what? This doesn't really give me what I want. Oh. See, if maybe if we had a conversation up front as to why you need this. 2 things. 1, maybe it's not a report at all. Maybe it's a whole frickin' new module. Right? Maybe they're trying to do something that is not capable of a report. 2nd thing is, I'm serious. Somewhere between $1,000 and $2,000 is the minimum price for a customized crystal report. Period. End of story. That should be the minimum price. Why? Because if there is not the value, you shouldn't be doing the report. If it's not significantly going to make an impact on their business, there's no reason to do it. Then you are, that's immoral to me. Then you are gouging them. Understand what the value. Maybe it's only worth 50 cents to have this report. We think we need it. Well, is it moral for you to go in and just do it because they think they need it, or is it more moral for you to ask some questions about it? So I really want to understand if this is something that makes sense for you. Because maybe there's a better way to address this. What we do right now, and I've got a blog post on this, is we are what I'll call solutionists. We provide solutions for the sake of providing solutions because it makes us, consultants especially, feel good. Providing a solution is like crack cocaine for a consultant. I like doing it because it makes me feel good. It makes me feel important, even if it doesn't provide value to the customer. Fair statement? Hard reality. Fair statement? So if the value's there, and then, you know, is $1,000, help me with the math here, $1,000, let's go 50 weeks a year, how much is that a week? Accountants, $20 a week, right? I knew the answer. It was just tough. All right, so $20 a week, right? Got this right? Shouldn't a crystal report save at least $20 a week? Shouldn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Before we even design it?
At least.
Yeah. So minimum price, 50. So you got to write that down. Minimum price crystal report is $1,000. Okay. So the concern with the how many hours is, look, we don't bill by the hour. We don't bill by the hour. We bill by the job. We don't do our pricing that way. Yeah?
Do you change your strategy when you're dealing with a project that's going to be, you know, in the hours, since it's 1,500 to 2,000?
Two answers to that question. Overall, No, this, the approach is going to be the same. I still want to get a fixed price. I think that any project that starts to get in larger and larger demand for those kinds of things, you should phase it, right? Break it into phases. And you're giving a price on a phase-by-phase basis to say, let's do this. We'll do this phase. If this phase is discovery, let's call it, and the phase, and that's $2,500 for discovery. And then if after discovery we still think that there's value here above and beyond, then we'll give you a price for the next phase. And so on and so on. Doesn't that make sense?
Just, you keep saying we price on this, but if most of your jobs come through referrals, they probably talk to someone who already said, oh, she charges and they charge at this rate.
Mm-hmm.
What about, like, the transition, like, maybe we can put this on, but how do you do the transition from one way to the other when a lot of the work's referral based?
Look, you got to educate your referrals.
Okay.
You know, stop giving pricing for us. Thank you very much. All right? I mean, why should anybody else be giving you? What, you know, here's the amazing thing about pricing. I am fascinated by the subject of pricing just in general. Pricing is, think about it, is the one thing that you actually control. I mean, it's the one thing that you actually have control over is your price. You set your price. Now, you can say, well, it's dictated by the market. Well, you know, all of it, you know. Yeah, the market. You know, Stanley Marcus said that if market price is dictated, I haven't had a. Never once did a market come in and buy something from one of my stores. I've had an awful lot of customers, right? But you know, and look, market pricing is not necessarily the way to go. Market pricing can be poor pricing. Yeah, another great pricing strategy: let your competition set your prices. That's a good way to go out of business fast. Right? If your competition sets your price? No, we own our pricing. And by the way, we're going to justify why we get that pricing. Because we give a 100% money-back guarantee on services today. Well, no. Okay. That's why we're higher. I have one partner, Josh Avetta, are you here? I don't know if you can see it. Josh says, when he sends out his proposal and he gets back, they say, wow, this is like, you know, 3 times higher than everybody else that who's given me this bill. He's like, yep, that's because I'm the best. It would be news if my price was lower. Next question. Yeah.
When you're saying phases or whatever,
yeah.
What about the final phase, which is the ongoing phase of continued support?
I have another session. Beyond the scope of this, and Gabe, this is 4 o'clock tomorrow. I think it's 4 o'clock tomorrow, on creating a partner-based customer ongoing support plan that is completely fixed price. It's not truly a full value price, although there's an element that is a value price. But we're going to go through the elements of that in another session, outside the scope of this session. Yes, we have an answer for that, too. Okay. So we're understanding of scope. I think we've got the whole top done here. Where are you using it? Where are you using it? Let's open it up. Let's get some people. Some of those of you, I'll stop blabbering on for a few minutes. And for those of you that are doing value pricing, could you tell me where you're using it, Joe? You're sitting up front here, so if you want to just, where are you using value pricing in your organization?
Where are we using value pricing?
Yeah.
Everywhere.
Okay. All right. Anybody else want to? Where specifically are you using it? Yeah.
What customers want. Certain deadlines that are possible, we have more resources to it, so then the price goes up.
Okay, so there's value there. Okay, one of the other things too, and this relates to project management, is concept of risk. What amazes me is that we all know we have A and B level customers, C and D level customers, right? You guys have a little mix of both of those in your organization. Right? Do you have a different rate for A and B and C's and D's? Why? Aren't the C's and D's, aren't they more risky?
Yes.
Okay. Risk equals profit.
Mm-hmm. How do you initiate that rate structure if you've never done it before? So if you have a normal rate, and how do you, when you first are working with somebody,
I object to your use of the term normal rate. It's not.
Necessarily. You might have some.
How many of you have a pretty good feel?
Sales process sales game.
Yeah. Pretty good feel whether this is going to be a good or bad customer. So, and by the way, I'm not even advocating. I shouldn't have even said that. I don't advocate rates at all. I mean, get them out. My point is that pricing should be based to a certain extent on risk. If you feel that this is a more risky engagement, well, excellent. Thank you. That's all right. We're good. If you feel that this is a more risky engagement, shouldn't you increase your price, whether you're doing it by the hour or not? But shouldn't you increase the price? Yes? Whoa. That was a windy one. Hello. Thank you. I really appreciate this. Keeping everybody awake. All right. So wouldn't you increase the price? And we don't. We don't factor. I think I'm passing out. That's right. Jill will take over. But my point is risk is it should impact price, and it does not at all. In fact, who are the customers that you probably lower your price for?
The ones that complain or difficult from the beginning.
The ones that least like.
Does this make any sense?
No. No sense.
I mean, there's no logic to that at all. Like, yeah, okay, we think this guy's going to be terrible, and they're beating us up on price, but yeah, so we've lowered our rate by $50 an hour to get the deal. What? I mean, you're a moron. What are you doing? Well, it's because our salesperson sets our price. Ah, see, there's a problem. Okay, there's a problem. Salespeople should not set price. By the way, salespeople are only matched in poor prices by one other group of people. Who do you think? Consultants. All right? You're even more poor than the salespeople. There should be somebody at your firm, and we have a little bit of time after. I think we're running down, aren't we? Well, see Joe. Joe is one of the industry's first chief value officers. That's what his internal title in his company is. All right, quickly, let's go through this. No timesheets as benchmarks. Well, you know, this is a simple answer because this call relates to project management. Any of you who say that, you know, because we build 90% of the hours, does that mean we're 90% done in this project? No. In fact, it's probably a really poor, right, measure of how much done you are. Right? In fact, you could be completely done and only bill 90%. And then what happened to the other 10%? Well, you lose it. Well, yeah, the customer's happy. All right. So, but you could also be only half done. So it's a poor. Now, if in project management, if you have a complete task list and you're looking at all the tasks, and we say we've completed 90% of the tasks on time, is that a better, not perfect, but is that a better indication of the percentage of the way through the project? Okay, so there's the benchmark question. You know, it's not by time. It's how many of these tasks do we complete on time? That's the measure. That's the thing that we're going to benchmark. Industry concerns. Okay, specific to an industry. We were having dinner last night with a group that has gone through Value Price Bootcamp, and actually there's a not-for-profit partner who said value pricing was built for the not-for-profit market. It was built for the not-for-profit market. Because what not-for-profits want more than anything else is, what is it going to cost? I want it. What's the price? Give me one price, and that's it? Yes. I'm not going to go back to the board for anything? No. Here's the price. But understand that we're also fixing the scope of services, and that if you now have a scope, something that's outside the scope, you're going to say, look, I said this is the price, but you want more stuff. You might have to go back to the board for more stuff, but that's outside the scope of what you said. That's fair, isn't it? Right. So I think it's built for any industry. You know, we're one of the few people who do pricing this way, this lunacy. So it's built for any industry. Customers like this. All right, employee comp. So this is somewhat related to this. So if we're not measuring our employee comp, how are we going to compensate our folks? Well, I truly believe, by the way, I don't know how many of you are employees versus owners in this, but I think that, and this is only a recent development in my thinking on this, comp should be based on the following. You're going to get for everyone in the organization, a base salary, whatever that is, The next thing that's on top of this is some variable component based on the learning that this person does, has to achieve. I'm going to give you specific learning objectives, or you're going to come to me with some specific learning objectives, and if you achieve them, you're going to get some kind of a reward based on demonstrating the knowledge of that. Why? We are knowledge firms, folks. And increasing the knowledge of our people is one of the key assets that we have. So they should be rewarded for increasing their knowledge, not just billing hours. All right. So if they increase their knowledge, they get an additional payment against that. And then the last component of their variable comp plan should be based purely on, ready, the profitability of the entire company. You're saying, Ed, that as a consultant, if the company isn't profitable, I shouldn't get any money. Yes, that's what I'm saying. Because it's everybody's responsibility inside the organization to make sure that we are doing profitable, good work for customers. In most small organizations, don't give me any crap. Well, we're, you know, it's profit is what we are after. Stop shying away from it. Profit is not evil, you know, unless we have Marxists in the room, anyone? Profit is not evil. It's okay. It's what we should strive for. And so that's it. So forget about billable hours, employee comp. Forget about it. Capacity is the last issue, and these are all related on this. How do we plan for capacity? Yeah. Am I saying that you should not plan for capacity? Absolutely not. That is not what I'm saying at all. But what I'm saying is that your timesheet is a lagging indicator of that capacity. Yes? Yes? All right? Planning your capacity based on your timesheet is a lot like Ron Baker says, is timing your cookies with your smoke detector. Right? Boop! They're done. Boop! We're over capacity. Better hire somebody. So what we're saying here in this whole concept is if you do your capacity planning, I know this is radical, ahead of time. You plan. We don't take on engagements when we know we don't have capacity for it. We tell the customer, hey, listen, I'd love to have you as a customer, but I can't get in until September. Well, we really want to be in now. Great. If you really want to be in now, that's not a problem. I can offer you a price that will allow you to be in July. It's twice the price as if it was September. That's your choice. Because what I will have to do is I will have to go out and get outside resources to plan for the capacity issue. But clearly, the value is there. You're saying that you're spending $1 million a month not having this solution. So if I double my price and instead of $100,000, I charge you $200,000 and you still save $1 million a month, can you explain to me what the problem is? No. Great. July or September? July. Great. We'll be there. Making sense? BB20. Let's take some questions, but I'm wrapped up. I mean, I can stay here. We can only stay here another like 5 minutes, okay, folks? So.
I know it's a mentality change. When I come in as billable, then my client is, you recognize this guy's billable. I'm not going to bother him with every little question, interrupt him, all that stuff. We try to be nice while we're on the job. But if I'm there on a fixed price basis, they want to take advantage of every little thing, stop me, ask questions, do this and that. And that's why I have trouble really saying no and being quote unquote mean to them and clarifying that. Do you have any help with that?
Yeah. See, you need to learn how to say no. What do you want me to tell you?
Keep
doing it. Mm-hmm. And look at this way. Let's leave it in that you're billing by the hour. After a certain point, do they continue to pay? Right? Or do they say, nope, we're done. We're not going to pay you anymore.
And they pay for what?
Yeah. Right. But I mean, if they keep adding stuff on, right, and you keep doing more and more work, and they get fun, hey, this is now way over budget. Does that happen? Well, you're saying that you allow scope creep to come in. Is that just completely? Let me understand you. That you allow scope creep.
I know it's an attitude change in him. It's a really a mentality. The users, everybody there, everybody on site. There's a different mentality, a willingness to really be to not be concerned about the time of the consultants that we're paying a fixed price, rather than until we notice a lot more questions coming from a lot of different sources rather than
right.
Really being aware that this guy every minute extra in the process. It's a mentality difference.
So in other words, your customers communicate better with you when you give them a fixed price.
Yeah.
They're more apt to complain.
Okay, so they're more apt to communicate and get and talk about. So, and is that a good thing? Because then you can address the concern.
Well, not necessarily. I would prefer that they would then have one go-to person that channels all that.
Okay. That value pricing doesn't stop you from doing that. Put somebody in charge, yeah. I don't see where that question relates to pricing.
Well,
it's a scope issue. Now, there's two parts of the question. If they're just asking you more questions and communicating that is all part of and inside the scope of the project, great. Because the more questions that you have now, that probably means less questions later, yes?
Okay.
All right? Now, but if they're asking you to put more and more stuff on top of what it is that you want to do, and you're not saying, no, I'm sorry, look, that's outside the scope of this project. That's a scope creep issue, and that's where you have to start saying, hey, listen, we define the scope effectively, and this is clearly outside the scope. Now, what your problem may be, and I don't know, let me just guess, is that if I were to ask you to send me a scope document from your organization, I would get back a proposal.
Correct.
Okay, and that's the problem. Right? Your range of hours is not a scope document. That's not a scope document. A scope document has 10 or 11 specific elements that are involved in it, and they're very specific about this is what you're going to get. And it lists all of the reports, and it lists all of the integrations, and it lists all of the data interfaces, and it lists all of the data that's going to be entered, and it lists all of the data that's going to be converted. Oh my God, that's a lot of work. Yes, it is, but that's what a scope is.
It doesn't matter if you bill by the hour or you get fixed fee. The customer always has a perceived price in their head.
Right.
The perceived value for the project. So if you overrun on your hours, they're going to force you to write down because you've already established the perceived value in their mind.
That's correct.
Doing it that way.
And that's why the value selling element comes in, is that we need to keep coming back to the concept of the value of this to you is $100,000. I've charged you $10,000 for this implementation. Remember, yes, if you ask for this other report, and I'm going to say that this report is another $2,000, look, you're still getting the $100. Right? I mean, so we have to have it in comparative. What this is in direct response to the communist theory of value. This is what's called the Austrian school or marginalist school that says value is subjective. Value is in the eye of the beholder. Value is what the customer says it is.
One thing in scenarios like that is keep in mind that it's very easy to make consulting synonymous with project management, and that's not necessarily a good strategy for things of depth and width and scope. And project management has value in a project that has depth. And it also gives you somebody to control and be the choke point for some of the eclecticness of some of our clients. Mm-hmm. So that and you can charge for that. I mean, that's
right.
Part of the scope. You say, listen, you know, based on our experience and the number of phases and tasks and things that have to be accomplished, we are going to say that project management has this much value for the project. And, you know, that's your ringmaster.
Stop. You do not say to your customer, project management has this value. It is not up to you to determine. You do not determine value. You don't say project management has 10% value in this project. That you don't know. Please don't say that. Okay? Because this whole thing, this whole project has a value of this, and here's the price. Whether I'm project managing, training you, whatever it is whatever the task it is that I'm working on is irrelevant as long as you get the result you want. Why do we even have to break it out? Installation, training, blah, 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 blah. I mean, it's just madness. And by the way, we spend most of our time just moving the buckets around so that we can come to some one-to-one ratio. I would say project management is all the projects.
Right.
So there is no, and that's another misnomer, is that is there a number that I can say, should I allocate 10% to project management, 25% to 5% to project management? No. It's all project management. That's what it is. That's what you do.
Yeah. Figure out the pricing and not run into a scope creep issue.
Yes, and you've got to understand value selling, yeah. And you've got to understand value marketing, and you've got to come to Value Price Bootcamp in July. There's the commercial. Right?
Where is
we've
it?
Got in New Jersey, five miles.
There's one in June in San Francisco, too.
No. There's a project management bootcamp in San Francisco. Yeah. Value Pricing Bootcamp is July. In Lyndhurst, New Jersey, it's about 5 minutes from Newark Airport. You're not going to be in Newark long, trust me. We'll get you right out of there. We limit that class size. We limit that class size. I think there's like 8 or 9 slots left. So, you know, if you're going to do this, get on it. It's www.sagesoftware.com. You all know that one, right? /SPU for Sage Partner University. It's a listing of all of the boot camps and classes that we offer. Yes?
Oh, I agree with everything. I think some of the problems are cause control. You start that talk. I agree with everything you said, except with the rubber meets the road, like this gentleman said. Because the perspective of the customer, now, I'm not as sensitive to your time management. And if you got one price value, I see the market's got a good price, But a couple hours, he says, before I had to get you up, I knew. Now I can ask a little bit more questions. It's not scope creep. It's just taking advantage of your time a little bit.
It's better communication.
Okay, and so you still have to, like the project manager say, you have to have controls for calls. And then there's a scope document just to get that detail.
I would object and say that you need to look at the studies done by Toyota, who does not have, Toyota, the car company, does not have a cost accounting system as we know it.
No, I'm just saying.
My question, let me finish. Do we need to understand our cost structure? Yes. Do we need to allocate our costs? Yes. If I do 12 projects, let's throw this out. If I do 12, just to make the math easy, 12 projects a year, okay? And I'm just going to take, and they're of varying sizes. And I have small, medium, and large projects. Just going to give them buckets, right? So now I've got 4 small, 4 medium, 4 large. Make math real easy here. I'm just going to say, what's my total salary cost, right? I'm going to divide that by 12, and then I'm just going to allocate it small, medium, large based on some kind of a percentage. I'm going to say, good enough for government work. Close enough. You think you'd be like probably pretty close? Pretty close. Now, what will you save not having to fill out a timesheet in your company? You know what the cost of driving time through your company is? Tracking time? It's staggering. It's somewhere between 5 and 10% to the bottom line. So just allocate it. Yeah, close enough. Ready? Here's the secret. Price higher than your costs. Yeah,
Carol. Real quickly, just to address the customer issue, I used to be really worried that customers would use my time if I wasn't filling by the hour. And they are way more relaxed. They do ask more questions, but increase your prices. It doesn't make that. You'll get a better trained customer. They'll be more relaxed. They'll learn more. There'll be less questions. Those go live. The whole project will be much more successful.
Yeah.
And it works. It's amazing.
They love it. Higher customer satisfaction rate. Yeah, okay, good.
Yeah.
Any resources you can point us to? Books or internet?
Yes. Verisage.com, okay. Right? It's all about that. Any book by Ron Baker, B-A-K-E-R, including one called, ready? This is like really hard to understand. The Professional's Guide to Value Pricing. It is value priced at $150 for the book. $150 for the book. comes with a CD that has, and this is why, has, aside from the definitive Bible on all of this pricing and costing idea, a CD that has sample contracts, sample service order agreements, all great sample documents that you can then use and incorporate into your practice. Now, it's written from an accountant's perspective. In other words, it's for accounting firms primarily. But I think you'll get it. Okay, so there's resources. Yes?
Do you take this value pricing concept down to the smallest engagement, like 3 or 4 hours of time?
Absolutely. What is the value to the customer? It all stems from understanding that price does not come from cost. Price has nothing to do with the number of hours that it takes you.
So who sets the price?
You do. You have to have an understanding of two things. What is the scope that the customer wants? What is the customer needs? And what is the value if you deliver that need?
So how does the customer determine the value of...
You don't. The great part of this is it's a series of questions, and this is why... You know, go talk to the Mahan Khalsa today at the booth and get involved if you still can, because we haven't sold anything out in the sales coaching program that Taylor announced today. I can't tell you, please, if you do nothing but after leave this session, go sign up for it right now. I mean, it's going to be I guarantee it, personally guarantee it. But it leads you through the steps of is a series of questions that you can ask that uncovers the value to the customer. Very similar to the exercise that we just did, and you know, you were very kind to me. I appreciate that. But you know, it's not quite as easy as all that in many cases. But you know, ultimately, the customer has a perception of what the value is anyway, right? And they probably think, oh, this is only worth $50. So if it takes you 3 hours and now you charge them $300, they're like, I'm getting ripped off. Yes. But if you go back to them and say, why do you need this report? Well, we need this report because it's going to do da 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 da. Oh, what's that going to do? It's going to save me 4 hours a week, really. So, what's your salary? You know. Well, can I just make a guess? Let me just allocate. Let's say that's $6,000 worth of additional time that you'll have. So, if I charge you $1,000 for the report, does that make sense? Yes or no? If they say no, you say okay, great, no problem.
So that pricing determination lies with the salesperson versus the consultant?
Actually, this is a little more complex. Come to Value Pricing Bootcamp, but I believe that pricing should be a skill that is developed inside your company, and there should be, in a small organization, one person who is responsible for setting price. That's their one of their primary functions is to set price. That's what they do. They get all this input, and they set the price. Yeah? I love this question. The best scenario to be in is one where you value price and your vendors charge you by the hour. Now, for those of you Timberline consultants out there, you're going, you really didn't just throw us under the bus. All right? But that is the best position to be in, right? Because you can command a very high price. And you tell them, yeah, oh, 20 hours, that's great. Yeah. Right? So, and I guess, you know, then there's the danger, well, what if they say they charge about the hour, blah, 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 blah. Look, you got to educate your customers. Right? This is to protect the customer. This is to protect the customer. They are more at risk when you bill by the hour. This is really to protect them and increase the value that you're providing. See you around. Have a great rest of insights.